content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Bahati Mutisia for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Teen Magazine. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Teen Vogue. The first article for today's program is titled, August 28th in Black History, Why This Date is So Important. This article is written by Jamila Nasheed and was published August 27th, 2021. There's just something different about August 28th. From the August 28th of 1833, when the Slavery Abolition Act was passed in the British colonies, gradually leading to the emancipation of their enslaved black people, to August 28th of 2020, when iconic black actor Chadwick Boseman passed away. This day in history is distinct. It tells a story. I was 18 years old and sitting in my college dorm room when I watched a confident, seemingly fearless black man become the first black person to accept the presidential nomination for a major political party. I smiled as I witnessed Barack Obama make history, thrilled at the fact that my first vote would be for a black man. Until the panic set in. Watching a young, smiling Obama make his acceptance speech, what I remember most was thinking to myself, someone might try to kill him. History taught me, time and time again, to fear for the lives of black history makers. It was August 28th of 2008. I listened as Obama said, "It is that promise that 45 years ago today brought Americans from every corner of this land to stand together on a mall in Washington before Lincoln's memorial and hear a young preacher from Georgia speak of his dream." He was talking about Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., who had given his I Have a Dream speech on that same day, way back in 1963. King was one of those figures who taught me to fear for the lives of black history makers. He was 34 years old when he told a crowd of more than 200,000 about his dream, and only 39 when he was killed because of that dream. "You've seen it," King once said of racial injustice, in the crying voice of a little Emmett C. Till screaming from the rushing waters in Mississippi. King was one of the many people inspired to take action after the brutal killing of 14-year-old Emmett. The teen was brutally murdered after allegedly whistling at a white woman, Carol Bryant Donham, who later admitted to lying about the incident. When his mother, Mammy Till Mobley, chose to have an open casket funeral, black leaders and activists were energized, and the civil rights movement was ignited. King told the world about his dream exactly 8 years after Emmett's dismembered body was thrown into Mississippi's Tallahatchie River. It was August 28, 1955, when Mammy's boy, Emmett, was killed. In the midst of that pain and loss, black people were doing what we do better than many. We were finding joy and creating art. 2 years before we heard about King's dream, Motown released its first number one hit, "Please, Mr. Postman," by the Marvelettes. It was August 28th of 1961 when Motown's lasting impact on music and American culture began. Motown moved the world. For black Americans especially, it was a soundtrack to so many precious moments. Still, during all that living and loving, the oppression and racism persisted. Motown gave us Marvin Gaye and Tammy Terrell's "Ain't No Mountain High Enough" and The Temptations' "My Girl," but it also gave us Stevie Wonder's "Living for the City" and Gaye's "What's Going On." People don't realize what's really going on in this country. There are a lot of things that are going on that are unjust. People aren't being held accountable, and that's something that needs to change. That's something that this country stands for: freedom, liberty, and justice for all. And it's not happening for all right now, said Colin Kaepernick. This was during his first media appearance to further explain why he decided to take a seat on the San Francisco 49ers bench during the national anthem. It was August 28th of 2016. A few days later, he shifted his silent protest from sitting down to kneeling. Kaepernick's peaceful protest was met with criticism and opposition by many, including the National Football League, NFL fans, and former President Donald Trump. The backlash was another reminder of that reality, that to the oppressor, there's no satisfactory way for the oppressed to voice their dissatisfaction, which is, in part, why we have uprisings, oftentimes referred to as riots. What's now known as the Philadelphia race riot happened after a rumor spread that a white police officer had beaten a pregnant black woman to death. The uprising was a direct reflect of the frustrations of black residents over persistent racism and police brutality. The scene was similar to what we witnessed in the summer of 2020, but it came exactly 1 year after King's I Have a Dream speech. It was August 28th of 1964. In addition to over-policing, black communities have also endured underfunding for years. The George W. Bush administration's severe mismanagement of Hurricane Katrina, which had a disproportionate effect on New Orleans' black citizens, was a reminder of our country's disregard of black people and black life. Hurricane Katrina reached Category 5 status on August 28th of 2005, 1 day before it made landfall as a Category 3 storm. Time and time again, August 28th has shown us who we are. It has shown us how the worst parts of our country's history refuse to remain in the past, because the worst of our fellow Americans refuse to let them. To break these cycles and face these systems of oppression, we must shed light on them. We must keep bringing them to the forefront. In 2020, a year plagued by unsurmountable loss, Chadwick Boseman died. Boseman portrayed several of our black history makers on screen, just such as Jackie Robinson, Thurgood Marshall, and James Brown. Even his fictional characters brought black history into the spotlight, like his portrayals of a black soldier during the Vietnam War and a trumpet player in a film adaptation of August Wilson's play. All of that on top of the fact that he was our Black Panther. It was August 28th when the man who dedicated his life's work to bringing black history and black stories to life passed away. On this day in history, I can't help but think about how far we've come and how far we still have to go. I can't help but wonder how many more August 28ths until black humanity is recognized in its fullness. How many more August 28ths until we get more than hashtags and symbolic unity? How many more August 28ths will it take to wake up our lawmakers and leaders? How many more until we see true systemic change? Throughout history, we've been told that change doesn't happen overnight and that we have to be patient. Well, it's been years. On this day in history, we remember. The next article is titled, Podcast on Our Minds Helps Students Break Down Stigma Around Mental Health. This article is written by Rowan Albaba and was published August 27th of 2021. Rowan Albaba is a digital producer at PBS NewsHour Student Reporting Labs. For many, mental health is a fraught subject. As a result, it's become something we don't really talk about, but that silence can be misleading. The silence might make you think you're alone in struggling with your mental health. In reality, 17% of youth will experience a mental health disorder, according to the National Alliance on Mental Illness. And, according to a 2018 Pew survey, 70% of teens say that anxiety and depression are major problems among their age group. Talking about mental health can help break down stigma, which is exactly what a new teen-led podcast aims to do. In On Our Minds, a podcast series by PBS NewsHour Student Reporting Labs, titled SRL, a 16-year-old Noah Konovich and Zion Williams offer first-person narratives and introspective discussions with experts on what mental health looks like for young people like themselves. It's okay not to be okay, Konovich says in one of the episodes in an effort to normalize talking about mental health. The first season of On Our Minds delves into the biggest mental health challenges young people face, from race and identity to self-care, school, and depression. It was created in partnership with WIDA's Wellbeings, a multi-year mental health public awareness campaign that works with local PBS stations across the country to deliver local programming. In each episode, Noah and Zion give listeners guide listeners through stories told by high schoolers about teenage experience. How do you deal with the highs and lows of virtual learning during a pandemic? What's the connection between racial inequity and mental health? How do we manage an overload of information coming at us online? In one of the episodes, actress and social media influencer Asia Jackson reflects on her own struggles with anxiety and depression and how going to therapy and taking medication helped her. I spent the last few years thinking that life was always going to be this way, and life was always going to be this miserable and terrible. And then I went to therapy, and it got a little bit better. And then I went on medication, and it got much better, says Jackson. Your life is never always going to be this way. Other episodes talk about the difficulty of expressing unfamiliar feelings as the pandemic continues to rage on. I would just sit in my room and kind of just cry and be upset and be like, why is this happening? Said Jackson Sela, a student from Michigan. I never experienced being a teenager in a pandemic and not being able to see your friends and not being able to just live your life like you want to. This kind of honesty is what the creators of the podcast were hoping for by using audio rather than video to tell a story. Student Reporting Lab's youth media producer Bridget Gangsky, who helped produce the podcast alongside Noah and Zion, says it lends anonymity and encourages vulnerability. The podcast medium was a great choice for young people talking about mental health, says Gangsky. Students could share candidly and honestly about their experiences in a more anonymous way. Each episode also features a mental health expert who helps Noah, Zion, and listeners understand different mental health conditions and gives tips for self-care. In a special bonus episode of On Our Minds, psychologist and author Tara Brach leads listeners through a guided meditation to help recognize, center, and acknowledge anxiety and emotions. It helps to send the message through your hand to your heart, and it might be simply, if it's anxiety, saying, thank you for trying to protect me, but I'm okay right now. Summing up her experience hosting In Our Minds, Zion says, doing this podcast helped me learn that it's so important to take time for myself and be aware of my emotions, and realizing that by becoming aware of my emotions and how they're affecting me, I simultaneously improve my mental health for the better. The next article is related to the first one, which says, Chadwick Boseman remembered by celebrities, fans 1 year after his death. This article is by D. Elizabeth and was published August 29th, 2021. Sorry, Elizabeth D. It was published August 29th, 2021. Celebrities and fans alike have come together this weekend to remember actor Chadwick Boseman on the one-year anniversary of his death. The Black Panther star passed away on August 28, 2020, after a four-year battle with colon cancer. In the months that followed, his memory continued to be honored through posthumous awards and numerous tributes reflecting the profound impact Chadwick had not only on the film industry, but on fans and young people who looked up to him as a true inspiration. Those tributes continued this weekend in honor of the significant day. Social media posts poured in from Chadwick's friends and former co-stars, including Lupita Nyong'o, Michael B. Jordan, Josh Gad, and more. In a tweet on Saturday, Lupita shared a photo of the two actors laughing, and she wrote, "I did not know that I could miss both his laughter and his silence in equal measure. I do. 1 year after his passing, the memory of Chadwick Boseman remains this alive in me." Similarly, Michael shared a happy memory of Chadwick on Instagram, adding in the caption, "Not a day goes by, bro. Love and miss you, but I know you still with us." Actor Josh Gad reposted one of the final text messages he received from the late star, describing Chadwick as an angel on this planet and now a saint on high. The official Twitter account for Marvel Studios also paid tribute to Chadwick, calling him our friend, our inspiration, and our king. Other celebrities, including Viola Davis, Mark Ruffalo, Jane Lynch, and Kerry Washington, also shared their memories of Chadwick on Twitter. And Howard University, Chadwick's alma mater, posted the following tribute. "Today, we remember and celebrate the life of our beloved son, Chadwick A. Boseman, a unique actor, director, writer, and producer who played many American icons throughout his career and became an icon himself. His legacy will continue to live on forever." Some of the other posts from Viola Davis, she stated, "This day last year, you left this earth and us. Man, you are missed." Jane Lynch posted, "The death of Chadwick Boseman boggles my mind. Seemingly out of nowhere, he appeared in a flash, bursting on the scene with light and power and youth and strength and love and light. And then he was gone." Celebrities aren't the only ones remembering Chadwick this weekend. Plenty of fans came together to honor the actor's legacy while sharing that what his work has meant to them. "Chadwick was genuinely such a light," wrote Twitter user Corey S. Verse. "He's made such an impact on so many people all over the world. I feel like words will just never be able to really describe how missed he is. It still doesn't feel real." Other fans, like Shy Styler, reflected on Chadwick's 2018 Howard University commencement address, where he spoke on the importance of purpose and living in the moment. "Thinking of Chadwick Boseman today and this divine message," wrote Chias Tyler, alongside a video of Chadwick's speech, "Long live the King." And what I think will be our last article is titled, "Disabled students are worried about losing accommodations at school." This article is written by Mary Retta and was published August 20th, 2021. Katherine Greenstein, a student at American University in Washington, D.C., rather enjoyed taking classes remotely last year. "As someone with multiple disabilities and health conditions, including chronic migraines, eosinophilic esophagitis, gastroparesis, and hypermobility, taking classes via Zoom allowed them to do assignments at the doctor's office and to attend classes while laying in bed if they were fatigued. As American and many other schools across the country prepared to return to in-person learning in the fall, Greenstein is anxious about going back and feels as though specific requirements for accommodations shouldn't be necessary while the U.S. is still very much in the midst of a pandemic. "I'm absolutely terrified," Greenstein tells Teen Vogue. "I'm scared of students not respecting COVID restrictions. I'm scared of missing classes for appointments or illness and needing weeks to catch up, whereas I could have just gone to class from home. I'm scared of getting sick even when I do everything I can to prevent it because I'm living alongside thousands of students on campus. In a statement in Teen Vogue, an American University spokesperson refers to the extensive protocols in place to safeguard the well-being of students, faculty, and staff, including a COVID-19 vaccine requirement and indoor mask requirements for all university buildings. The spokesperson says that the school offers a selection of classes online and that students can work with their advisor and the university's academic support and access center to determine the appropriate courses for them. Greenstein is one of many young disabled people who appreciated the accommodations made available to students during the pandemic, such as the availability to take classes remotely and watch recorded lectures at their own pace, and are nervous that a return to in-person classes will make these accommodations disappear. Gigi Robinson, a recent graduate of the University of Southern California, tells Teen Vogue that participating in in-person classes was often difficult or stressful due to her Ehlers-Danlos syndrome and chronic pain. Taking classes via Zoom felt more accessible. Remote learning was the best thing to happen to me throughout my medical and academic career, says Robinson. Flexibility to do homework and presentations anywhere, anytime, to attend class without causing my pain to flare up was such a blessing. And let me be clear, this is something many disabled students have been asking for forever. It wasn't until everyone needed virtual learning that it was suddenly accessible. Aside from the academic flexibility that remote learning provides, many disabled students prefer taking classes online because it lowers the risk of catching COVID on campus. Some disabled people initially faced barriers to receiving the vaccine, like hard-to-access sign-up websites or vaccination sites. Some immunocompromised people who are fully vaccinated have seen low levels of protection, meaning they remain more susceptible to catching the virus, according to a series of papers published in the Journal of the American Medical Association this spring. On August 12th, the Federal Drug Administration authorized an additional vaccine dosage for certain immunocompromised individuals, a measure that will hopefully make some disabled students feel safer on campus this year. Lucy Treishman, a third-year student at New York University School of Law, NYU, uses a wheelchair, suffers from several autoimmune diseases and connective tissue disorder, a neurocognitive disorder, chronic pain, and fatigue. She tells Teen Vogue that remote learning significantly improved her school experience. And as NYU prepares to return to all in-person learning in the fall, she's nervous that her grades and health will suffer. I'm already stocking up on travel-size disinfectant wipes for my desks, small hand sanitizers, and extra masks, says Treishman. I plan to double mask, only eat and drink outside, and distance myself as much as possible from other people. Many disabled people have lived in a constant state of fear since the beginning of the pandemic. It's indescribably painful to watch non-disabled people prioritize their social lives over the health and safety of their community. Despite the health and flexibility-related benefits of remote learning, taking classes on Zoom can have social drawbacks for some students, as it's not as easy to chat with friends in the hall or cafeteria when fully online. But Melissa Shang, a recent graduate of Newton South High School in Massachusetts, says she never had those opportunities to begin with. She was born with Charcot-Marie-Tooth, a degenerative nerve disease that causes the muscles in her arms and legs to atrophy over time and can affect breathing. So many on-campus activities her peers participated in pre-pandemic felt off-limits. She couldn't eat lunch in the halls, for example, because she needed a steady table to set her tray on. While her friends often did homework in the yard after school, she couldn't sit comfortably on curbs or hills. More often than not, says Shang, I felt like an outsider in my own high school. But things changed last year. I could suddenly participate in group activities that were previously inaccessible, Shang tells Teen Vogue via email. Hallway lunches became Zoom lunches, and outdoor study sessions became Zoom study sessions. Not only was I able to more easily socialize with my friends, but from Zoom chats and Instagram DMs, I find myself making new ones who I'd never previously been in the same inaccessible spaces as. Though remote learning has made school more accessible for many students with physical disabilities, some neurodivergent students, people with learning disabilities, and those who are deaf and hard of hearing may feel left out. Many have complained that Zoom's lack of automatic captioning and sign language interpreters have left out deaf and hard of hearing students during remote classes. In February, Zoom announced it would make live transcriptions of meetings available by fall of 2021, and the company is offering automatic closed captioning to meeting hosts in the interim upon request. Carly Campbell, a neurodivergent student at Montclair State University, says the switch to remote learning was very difficult for them. I'm the kind of person who thrives best in a classroom environment where I have no real distractions and can focus on taking rigorous notes, Campbell explains. With remote learning, I feel less and less attached to the materials and am far more likely to indulge in activities like playing video games or cleaning my dorm room rather than paying attention to subject material. I realized that remote learning was not beneficial for me, and my grades suffered. Zoom felt less like a tool to communicate and more like an obligation. Ultimately, disabled students just want the same chance as their peers to have a safe and healthy school year. I'm so scared that we'll be back to the unaccommodating era of come in or catch up mentality and capitalist-style productivity quotas, says Greenstein. The world is moving on far too quickly from a pandemic that still kills thousands of people every single day. I wish people understood that disabled students need compassion. We are humans. Our lives matter. We are people, and we don't deserve to be left behind. Well, we have now run out of time for today's episode of Teen Magazine. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Bahati Mutisia, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Teen Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you again for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.